So I bumped into one of my neighbors the other day.
Okay.
Not one of my neighbors, but someone in the neighborhood who I know.
Okay.
But, and when I say who I know, I meant he knew me and seemed enthusiastic, so I just sort of played along. No clue who he was.
Okay.
And he's like, oh, hey, hello. And I said, oh, hey, how you doing? And he's like, oh, it's, you know, not so good. The snow the other day, I was shoveling the snow and I twisted my ankle and my hand was kind of sore. And my wife, she's pretty sick.
Oh, no.
And I was like, oh, hang on. Let me rephrase that. What I meant to say was, hey, see you later. Welcome to episode 117 of the Two Hosers Photo Show. My name is Alan in Tübingen, Germany. And with me, as always, is
Adam in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
And we have a very special guest today, Adam.
And who would that be?
Well, let's let Neil introduce himself.
Hi there, I'm Neil Vannicook. I work as a photographer in New Jersey. And I do wedding photography and portraits, and I maintain a blog for photographers, and I write books, and I keep busy.
And if you don't know, I was going to tell people that you likely already know Neil from his blog or his books. And if you don't, today's a big day because you should read Neil's blog. I think I started reading your blog, Neil, just by accident, like everybody finds things, probably 3 years ago. Is that accurate? Has it been up at least 3 years?
Oh, the blog has been up about 6 years, and for about 2 or 3 years before that, it was up as a HTML webpage.
Ah, okay. So
it's been up about 8-9 years in one form or another.
So tell us a little bit about yourself, Neil, besides what you just said. I know you came from South Africa, former broadcast engineer. Where did it all start for you for photography?
Photography started for me when I was still in high school, or even earlier than that. I always had a very strong interest in wildlife and nature and bird watching. And my father had an old Practica camera and a 300mm Tokina lens. So my interest in birds and wildlife and bird watching turned into photographing birds. And very quickly I realized that the photography part is a lot more interesting than passively watching animals. So from there, it just became an overriding interest in photography since high school days, or even early high school days. And I ended up studying electronic engineering, and I was a broadcast television engineer. And part-time, I used to do photography, and the television center that I worked for, they were strange. They didn't pay us more for overtime and weekends. They gave us more time off. So I would work two double shifts or a weekend, then maybe work the Friday again. So I had massive amounts of free time. So my photography hobby started picking up speed where I was doing more and more freelance work. And eventually it was a parallel career. I was making as much money doing photography part-time as the engineering thing. And it just about came to the point where I had to decide if I wanted to do this full-time or not. And then we emigrated to the United States. And then I was a stay-at-home dad for 3 years because I didn't have a work permit. Mm-hmm. And it's in 3 years that I kind of started tinkering on creating a page. And so when I got my work permit, I thought, do I want to get back into broadcasting or do I want to do what I love? So
seems like a tough decision, yeah.
So 3 years out of date with the technology, and it's in South Africa, we, like Europe, we have PAL instead of America's NTSC. So it's a different system, and I'm years out of date. Or do I want to do photography? So I walked into a studio, a wedding photography studio here with my portfolio, and the studio owner liked me, and I got work and I started second shooting for the studio. And from there, it escalated where I was doing about 80 weddings a year for different studios in the area in New Jersey. So I shot for the studios for about 4 years, and then I went into business for myself, mostly doing weddings. And at some point, Amos Media, my publisher, contacted me and said, well, I want to write a book. And I said, okay, sure. And my books are based very much on the material on my website. Mm-hmm. And for those familiar with my website, it used to be Planet Neil. And there's a bit of an ego involved there. So no matter how you spell Neil, you'll get there, Planet Neil. And it's now Neil VN, V for Victor, N for Nancy, /tangents. But you can just Google Neil Tangents and you'll get there. And the website at this point has about 800 pages of articles on photography, flash photography, lighting, just anything I feel like writing about.
And so we will put a link to that on our website.
Yeah, so there's the whole history. Things kind of just flowed from there and escalated into something that is surprisingly big in the end. So,
well, I have your first book on camera flash. That was your first one.
On camera flash.
Right. I highly recommend it. Even though I had purchased the book, I was very familiar with a lot of the subject matter, but there was still a lot more to learn. And a lot of great takeaways, very specific takeaways in that book.
Yeah. Yeah, I must say, as an author, I've come to a very different appreciation of books. You know, a book at this point on Amazon, a photography book, an instructional book, is about $20. And if you think about it, $20 in the grand scheme of things is not that much money. You know, it's a steak. It's not even a meal for two people. But $20 can get you a book, and if in a book you pick up half a dozen things that change your photography and inspire you, that's huge. You know, for $20, that's massive. And you have a book that's on your shelf with nice photographs that'll help you and inspire you for years to come. So, you know, for me, and as I said, I'm biased here because I'm an author, but it's just, if you think about it, a book is such great value for money, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do highly recommend checking out Neil's book, and I'll say plural, check out his books. Very, very helpful.
Also, his blog is helpful. I've been reading your blog, Neil, for the better part of a year, and I find your blog very enlightening as well, and getting to see, you know, some of the techniques you use, and just seeing some of the different setups, it's a lot of learning to be done there as well.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, the blog, as I said, I reply to all questions, and I think what's interesting with the blog is anybody that's been following it over the years, there's the arc as I developed as a photographer myself, because the more I shoot, the more I learn, the better I get, and it just kind of escalates from there. So looking back at the stuff I did 8 years ago, sometimes is a little embarrassing, but there's a definite arc of my progress as well, and I think people have stayed with me over the years. It's part of a journey together. So that is something I find interesting and actually quite proud of.
And you can find all the past posts are still up there?
All the past posts are up there, yeah.
So I recommend everyone to check that out as well. And I have learned a lot. And one of our previous guests we've had on the show a couple of times, Amber, her and I were talking off air one time, and she mentioned that she reads your blog all the time. So it's just... Okay. So,
and I did read on your website, Neil, that you're 4 years running, one of the top 5% wedding photographers in New Jersey. Is that right?
Yeah, that's a Wedding Wire award, which is a kind of an industry award.
Okay.
Richard carries that much weight.
Okay, but I thought that was quite an accolade. Yeah,
I'm just impressed you did your homework, Adam.
Hey, who do you think I am?
No, I'm that's excellent.
Yeah.
That's great. So
do your research, buddy. Do your research.
No, I'm just going to phone this one in. Oh,
all right.
If he's done his research, he'll also know that my name is not actually Neil.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, very few people know my real name.
Are we going to have a big reveal on the show? Because that's going to be good for ratings.
Yeah, my full name is actually Cornelius. So there's actually broadcast to the whole world for the first time, I think.
There you go.
Okay, that's an exclusive on the two hosers. Mark that down.
And that's why, you know, you don't go with Cornelius because it's too long to say, or because you got ridiculed when you were in high school?
It's shortened as a different variation in South Africa, and I never quite liked the name, so I kind of anglicized it to Neil. But in retrospect, knowing what I know now, having come to America, I should have been Cornelius, you know, like Prince, Madonna.
Yeah.
Single.
Well, in retrospect, yeah. It sounds like a very Game of Thrones kind of name. Well, I've never seen that, so. So, Adam,
Yes.
What did you shoot anything interesting this week?
My son's birthday party, if that counts.
So no.
Yeah, not really.
Okay.
Yeah. And we went to Victoria, so took some pictures in Victoria. Some nice scenery there. The weather got nice on the West Coast, so I did get to take a few pictures out in Victoria on the island, close to the water, with some neat long sort of piers in the background. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, a couple of scenic shots with big groups, large groups, well, large by 10, but when you've got 5 children under the age of 6, I call it a large group.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so did a little bit of that.
And Neil, anything interesting this week? And I know you've had a snowstorm on the west on the East Coast as well, haven't you?
It's been a relentless winter again this year. But the big news for me is that I, quite by accident, found a really nice studio space, a loft in an old warehouse, 2 months ago, and signed the lease, and I moved in. And so for me, that's a big change in direction, or a big development, is that I have a studio. So the past week, I shot in a studio, and I specifically shot a promotional clip in the studio and photographed one of my favorite models. And I try to come up with different looks and different ideas instead of just using the white backdrop thing, because I think as a photographer in a studio, you know, one kind of gets stuck on the lights, backlighting, and just a basic standard lighting setup with a white backdrop. So I want to show different kind of looks in the studio and thereby promote the studio. So that was a bit of a challenge. I put up a video clip. So I've actually been really busy in the last week or two.
Oh, by the way, I've watched that video. Al, have you watched it? No,
yes.
And I even looked at all the pictures, because you posted all the pictures that went along with the video.
Yeah.
And I looked at all those too, and I thought they looked great. I love them. So, yeah, no, I was going to say about the video, what was that shot on? What was the video shot on?
6D.
The video. Yeah. D4.
Okay.
Oh, I thought it said 60. You shot something with a 6D recently. I did see something.
I photographed another model in New York with a Canon 6D. I had that camera out for review purposes, testing that out.
Uh-huh. See, Adam, I do pay attention.
That's the camera I shoot with, Neil, and I've been raving about it. So what did you think?
It's a lovely camera. The surprisingly nice heft when you pick it up, and you know, it's solid. It's, you know, the Canon 10D, 20D, 30Ds always felt just not solid like the old cameras used to, but the Canon 6D has that kind of feel to it. But I really like the camera, but I still think if somebody can swing the extra money, the Canon 5D Mark III is probably the best camera at the market for the money.
Yeah, yeah, I'm not going to argue with that.
I'm still on the Mark II, and my 40D is, I think it's officially dead now.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so it's going to be buried out in the backyard any day now.
And I have a question for you. You're going shopping.
Am I going shopping?
You're going shopping. You see, I just put a positive spin to it.
Yes. My wife sees it differently.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why would you need two cameras? That's her attitude. I popped over to London, well, like 2 weekends ago now, as we talked about on our Time Warp show.
Right.
And as mentioned, I only took my film camera with me. And how many rolls of film do you think I shot, Adam?
One.
What? Did I tell you already?
No, it's just a good guess. I'm good at guessing.
You are good at guessing. I shot one roll of 36 black and white, and that's it in the whole weekend.
And then have you developed it already?
Yep. Did I send them to you? No.
I don't know. Maybe.
Okay. No, I love the fact that I have an old Canon FTB, Neil, that's just with the 50mm f1.4, basically no electronics, almost none anyways, and it allows me to pack light. I really enjoyed my time in London versus, you know, chimping on every photograph and retaking, trying to get everything perfect. And plus, big surprise, in London it rained. But I didn't really care. Just tucked my camera under my jacket, and that's that.
Yeah.
So.
I still have a few cameras, film cameras. My favorite film camera that I ever had was a Pentax Super A. That was just such a fantastic little camera. So I have a copy of that in my shelf. And I have a couple of Nikon F cameras, the F3 and the F4 mint cameras on my shelf. I just I could never afford it way back.
Right.
It's inaccessible. It's like a dream camera to have, and the F4 was the same. So finally I realized, you know what, I can just finally get that camera I always dreamed about. So I bought an F3 Mint and a Nikon F4 Mint, and it's on my shelf because I can have it.
At about 1/20th the original price.
And but right now I have I just got a copy of the Fuji X100S, and what a camera, man! That is, you know, as Zach Ayres said, this is the new Leica. That is what an inspiring little camera.
I read both his and David Hobby's review of it, and they kind of confirmed what I was thinking. I really want one of those.
Now, from my initial tests with it, it's a fantastic camera. This is what the Fuji X100 should have been. It is fantastic.
I went and shot around with the X100 when it first came out, just not very in depth, but just kind of shot around a little bit with it, and it felt kind of clunky to me.
And there's a retro thing to the feel and the handling. There definitely is that.
Right, but it everyone was talking about how it was the camera that would just kind of get out of your way and let you shoot, but it didn't feel like that to me. It still didn't feel like everything was kind of where it should be. And then I've heard with the big upgrade to the 100S is it kind of disappears in your hand.
Yeah, the handling is still a very unique experience. You know, there's specific controls because of the hybrid viewfinder, the hybrid optical viewfinder. So there's specific controls and settings you have to set. So you have to be very aware of how you've set up your camera, but I think once you're used to it, it's a very sweet camera. I think that's going to be the collectible camera right now. It's just fantastic.
Have you seen those, Adam?
Just in ads. I haven't held one.
I don't know if they're in the stores yet. I think you have to be a big deal to get your hands on one right now.
Okay, I have read previews about it though. We have a camera, a subscription to a photography magazine, and on the cover of it, I don't know if it was last month or the month before, it was a popular photography or something along those lines, and it had a big front page. I read the article and I was impressed, but again, have not seen one.
Right. Let's get last week's Exivoku out of the way, Adam.
Okay.
Last week we shot the photo booth shots.
Right.
And I think we left off the shutter speeds.
Okay.
We gave everybody the rest of the info, and big surprise, both of us were at 1/200th of a second.
Surprise!
That should not have been a surprise at all. Those represent the max flash sync speed for those cameras that we shot with, and basically, I'm sure you did the same as I did and tried to kill all the ambient light and just use the flash only.
Yes.
And so that was 1/200th. So.
Okay.
This week's challenge was catch lights.
Right.
So why don't we let our guest go first, Adam?
Okay, Neil.
Okay, so we have two very different photographs here. The black and white photograph of a boy looking up. And it's not possible, really, I think, to say whether it's available, like, but there's a complex series of catchlights in the ISO. I would say this looks like available light, but
it is not.
Not.
It is a combination. Like the some of the catchlights, the small ones are ones that are just on the ceiling, and there is a bounce flash involved here with the black foamy thing as a tribute to the fact that we knew you were going to be on the show. So I did use an on camera flash with the black foamy on it to get some of the light in this photo, and that also represents one of the bigger catchlight in his eyes too.
And then it's beautifully handled, and then specifically, you know, because it's on-camera flash, what's beautiful is that you cannot tell that it's on-camera flash. It just looks like awesome light, which is what we're after. So, and I love your tonality you get here. It's a really nice tonality.
And what are the other little flecks of catch light? What are that from?
Well, we were in a bug museum, and he's looking up at, they had like this really complex ant farm that runs along the ceiling in tubes. So he's looking up at the ant farm, and it was a weird series of little lights all along the ceiling. So it wasn't like they had big lights. They just had these little bulbs. I don't know what they were like, but they were small, and they're all along the ceiling. So when he looked up, immediately I saw all the little lights in his eyes, and I thought right away, perfect, this is my catch light photo, because it's just a little different than what I'm used to seeing as a catch catchlight. And so then when I added the on-camera flash with the black foamy thing, then I got that extra one more in his on his pupil. So then I just thought it looked really cool. Like, and just looking even on the LCD, I just thought it kind of just made everything sparkle with all those lights. So sometimes we talked about before, like how many catchlights, and sometimes it's a bit distracting, but I just thought it looked cool. So there it was.
And in this case, I think it's a great example of the catchlights kind of being the center part of the center main focus of the picture.
Right.
And so that's really where your eye goes to immediately. So I think it's a great job.
Thank you very much.
I'm not normally very nice to you either, so you know.
No, so this is kind of a special occasion.
Yeah. Okay. Let's have a look at, we'll go with my entry next. Now, I had trouble picking mine. I had a bunch picked out. I even had one. This was not taken using the black foamy thing. I did take one specifically with it for today.
Okay.
And just kind of thought, meh, it was just a snapshot. And was not worthy of entering. So I did make the effort.
However, sure you did.
Yeah. However, this is what I went with. So it's my daughter getting her nose honked by her cousin.
I like it. I'll let Neil tear it apart.
it's a very cute photograph. Definitely the expression is there. So it's a little moment, and the parents will love it. The lighting is functional. It looks good. It looks like one large umbrella or maybe a big softbox off to the side. So the lighting is functional. I can't really criticize it, but I can see the shadow on the right-hand side of the backdrop. So it's kind of a minimalist lighting setup in a studio. It works, but it's not as exciting. The other shot for me just really had a lot more character and soul and, you know, if that makes sense.
That's what I like to hear, Neil. That's a big pat on the back for me.
Well, no, I'm going to edit that part out. So. don't get too excited, Adam. Yeah, no, this one, it was a situation of, well, shooting with three kids under two. You have a very small window, and coming from a film background, like a film and like movie background, I'd like to get my coverage. Meaning, I'd like to get this was set up originally as a nice wide shot. They're sitting on my daughter's desk, and our like little drawing table, and so I had a nice wide shot of all of them. And then I wanted to move in and get a close up, but I did not have time to change the lighting. So that's kind of why it's not as perfect as I'd like it to be. I agree. But in this case, I thought in the moment trumped the other photos. The other photos were a little more, I guess, technically sound, but I like the moment here. And I still think even without the catch lights, even though they aren't the major part of the picture, the catch lights, it wouldn't be as good a photo. Whew, I'm going to go have a nap.
The catchlight makes it, but as you say, the moment absolutely trumps it. You know, that's and I do agree with you. With the kids, you have such a narrow window, and if you have a shot or two in your pocket, you've pretty much nailed it, and you're good. You don't really get the opportunity over and over.
And you think my daughter would be prepped by now? She's the one in the middle, and you know, she'd get the other kids in line. But no, she was not behaving either.
The best part is she's not fazed at all by the nose honk.
No. No, she's quite used to that. The best part was she actually, the better than that, she's just getting over a cold, and so he came out with a big booger, which he then announced to the crowd.
Yeah, awesome.
Yeah. I forget the German name for it, but that's what he yelled out. So, and now we have Neil's photograph of, I'm assuming, a ring bearer.
It's a little ring bearer at a wedding where the bride and bridesmaids were getting ready, and he was all suited up. Looking very smart. This would be very typical of what I do with bounce flash, where I want it to look nothing like on-camera flash. There should be no clue that it was just a single on-camera flash. And one thing I always get asked when people look at my photographs is, how do you get the catchlight there? And I always say the catchlight has to be there if you bounce your flash correctly. And my approach with bounce flash is I bounce my flash into the direction that I want the light to come from. So in this case, I bounce my flash to my right-hand side. And you can see there's more light in the side of his face turned away from the camera. The side of the face turned towards the camera has got a little less light. There's that gradient across his cheek Yeah. As the light goes from light to shade. But I specifically bounce my flash into the position where the, in a hypothetical softbox would have been in the studio. You know, you place a softbox. The very simplest way to set up a softbox or a big light source in a studio would be sort of 30 degrees off to the side and 30 degrees or so above. And that's kind of where I bounce my flash towards, towards that hypothetical area where the softbox would have been. And then instantly you get that light. It has to look like that if you bounce a flash correctly. So the one thing I don't do is I do not bounce my flash upwards into the ceiling. Because if you were in the studio, you wouldn't place a big light source, a single light source above somebody's head, because you get heavy shadows in the eyes. So bouncing a flash into the direction that you want the light to come from instantly gives you awesome light in, you know, where, in an area where you have bounceable surfaces.
That sounds like a tip, Al.
I think we've actually passed that on before, and I did read that on your blog. This is one of the best examples I find of the bounce flash and the black foamy thing, because you would never in a million years guessed that this was on camera flash.
Unless you're a reader of Neil's blog, maybe. But
exactly, the watermark is a giveaway.
Yeah.
But other than that, this is a great example of why you should be paying attention to this show.
Okay, so in this setup, Neil, you just got basically what, like a black seamless black piece of paper or something behind him?
No. He was actually standing right in front of his mom, and the bridesmaids' dresses were really dark.
Oh, okay.
So that's why it just looks like black seamless behind him. It's just the bridesmaids' dresses were really dark.
And so how far is he from the dress there?
He was standing about, he was standing about 6, 7, 8 feet away from them.
Okay, yeah.
There's a little bit of light fall off there.
Yeah, and then just into a wall or something nearby there?
Bounce it into a wall, but I don't specifically look for a wall. If there's a TV set and furniture and paintings on the wall, that's part of what I bounce off. It's for me, the direction of the light is the most important thing here.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well.
Looks good.
I still think I win the photo challenge, but I admit that that's spurious, that claim.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, the Eggs of Oku, real quick, Adam.
Didn't you already do it?
No, for the ones that we... That was for last week.
Oh.
I want to read out the ones... I don't have Neil's in front of me, so I'm just going to read out the two of ours for the listeners. I shot mine on a full-frame camera, ISO 500 at an f/8 at 1/200th of a second.
Okay.
Adam's a crop sensor, ISO 400, f/2.5, and a shutter speed of 1/100th. So we're looking for the focal length on both of those. Okay.
Okay.
We had a lot of our listeners asking to find out, you know, basically they just said, just give me the f-stop. That was a lead in, Neil. That was I watched Neil's video at that was a B&H photo. You did that?
Yeah. Just give me the f-stop. And the idea was that with flash photography, a lot of people get hooked on their settings.
Mm-hmm.
When the settings very often are not that crucial. That it really is about the direction of light. And like the black and white shot of the little boy there, it's the direction of light, the catch lights, it's the quality of the light that is all important rather than whether it was f/2 or f/4. It's definitely shallow depth of field, but the exactitude of the f-stop is not that relevant.
Mm-hmm.
So talk that I gave, just giving the f-stop, was a misnomer because I didn't want to give people the f-stop because it's largely trivial.
That's how we feel too. I like to get a ballpark idea. The
ballpark's important. You know, you can see this one is wide aperture, this one is a medium aperture. You kind of have to have a feel for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I know in my blog, people often ask me for the specific focal length, and for me, it's not that important because you can see it was 24 millimeter-ish, 24, 28.
Mm-hmm.
You can see it was 200 or 180 or 135. You can see it's a long focal length. The exact numerical value is It's, for me, it's a red herring. You're not learning anything there.
Right. This week's topic. Let's say, nice, silky segue into this week's topic.
Okay.
What do you think we're going to talk about when we have Neil here?
Neil. We're going to talk about him.
We're going to talk about these. This is honest. This is hands down the best tip. And we've already mentioned on the show the black foamy thing. This is the best tip I've ever I can give people. And as always, and I know Adam does the same thing. We give Neil full credit, of course. Now I don't know that if you actually technically invented this, because it's been in, you know, theaters and movies for a long time, but you definitely named it.
Yeah, the black foamy thing. Doing a bit of research afterwards, I realized it's just a half snoot, and I'm just flagging my flesh. But it's something I had to discover for myself, because starting as a wedding photographer, it was an era where medium format was just giving way, and the 1DS, the Canon 1DS, just really changed things. So people were still shooting with the Lumadyne's, the big flashes, the you know, and direct flash. And it was still an old school way of working, but I never liked that hard flash look. Mm-hmm. But people were still shooting with the idea that you couldn't go higher than 400 ISO. So it's a lot of flash and small aperture, very much a medium format way of shooting. So when I started shooting with the studio, then, okay, we're going to change, not hard direct flash, use a plastic cup in your flash.
Right.
And I still didn't like that, because I could still see a hard shadow. I could still see specular reflections on the face. And I kind of had to figure this out for myself, because the people that were mentoring me at the studios were all very much old school photographers shooting medium format. And I just didn't like the results I was getting. So with that, I kind of had to go through the whole process of discovering this myself. So I got to the black foamy thing via my own route. But in retrospect, it's been there all along in various forms as flagging your flash and or half snoot. So the concept and idea has always been there. But as you know, sometimes you just have to discover the wheel on your own and get there. And this is what I do with the black foamy thing.
So before we get into what the black foamy thing is exactly, when you hear someone who's a sort of a, like a, an amateur who, you know, knows their way around a DSLR, and then they tell you that they are an ambient light photographer, does that set off any alarm bells?
You know, I immediately get the reaction that if somebody says, oh, I'm an available light photographer, my immediate reaction is, so am I, but I can use flash too.
See, my thinking is always that says to me, flash intimidates me.
Yeah, they don't know how to use lighting. And I think very often people would say, oh, I only use available light. They don't specifically use available light. They just, they only shoot available light, however random it is, whether it's flattering or not. Mm-hmm. They even lack the understanding of how to make the available light look better by moving the subject or using reflectors or, you know, a subtract of light and something and working with available light. So I think very often that little I'm an available light shooter is an admission that they don't understand light, not just flash, but they don't understand light.
Right. And specifically to flash, shooting flash when you're shooting 35mm film was pretty daunting, unless you really knew what you were doing. And besides just shooting basic on-camera flash, getting into basically strobist kind of stuff was very, very difficult. Now, however, with ETTL or ITTL or whatever through the lens metering you want to call it, and an LCD screen, I think it's a lot easier to get into and be more confident.
Oh, I would agree. Digital just changed everything. I shot for 3 years. My personal photography was in slide film, which is such a narrow latitude, which is kind of like a JPEG on digital phone. It's just a really narrow latitude. So for 3 years, I shot in slide film, and I get the stuff back, and I check my notes, how I shot. I learned more in 2 or 3 years shooting digital than I did in 30 years shooting film.
Oh, absolutely.
Shooting, oh, this is not working. What do I need to change? You adjust something. You adjust the position of light. You change your own position or anything. And you go, oh, I get it. You know, and it's the learning curve is just so much quicker with digital.
So don't fear the flash. That's what the takeaway here is. Now that we're shooting digital, don't be scared of it. We already talked a little bit about why you should bounce the flash, mainly the short answer is bigger light source, softer light, but the rest Neil's been through. So very specific, besides being a snoot and what is a black foamy thing? What does it physically do?
Okay, so the black foamy thing is it's a piece of art foam I buy from an art store, Michaels. It's a big sheet, cost me $1, and I cut it into quarters. And all it is I, with a rubber band or hair band, I put it under my flash. So there's only about an inch or two of a lip there that blocks the flash. So I can now take a portrait of somebody and bounce my flash slightly towards my subject. Now, if you bounce your flash towards your subject, you get a hard flash. You get that distinct hard shadow. You get the specular reflection of the face. But if I block that direct light with my hand or something, and I just bounce my flash off a wall, I just create one big, large light source, and the light looks soft. So that piece of black foam there is just to flag my flash. It's not a big thing. It's sometimes just an inch or two of something that blocks my light from hitting my subject directly from my camera's point of view. Because the light coming from a camera's point of view is very flat, very direct. And it's a small light source, so it's very hard. It's just not flattering. But if you bounce your light, it's big, soft light source, and you can now create directional soft light.
Now, and if you were to just bounce your light and ignore and not use anything to flag it off, you're going to get a little bit of spill coming forward.
Well, if you bounce your flash behind you, over your shoulder, and it's just a flood of light, your light tends to be flat but very soft. But where the black foamy thing kicks in is when I start bouncing my flash to the side and forward towards my subject. Then I need to flag my flash. I need to block that light from directly hitting my subject. And I used to use my hand, but it gets awkward holding a camera and a flash and a 70-200 and have my hand in front of the flash. And with it, out of desperation, I just kind of figure out, let me put something on here and add hot foam that I just kind of flex and cut and like, oh, hang on, there's something happening here. So it really is just about creating a large light source, but making sure no flash directly from my subject, from a camera hits my subject.
Now, I ended up, before I got read about the black foamy thing, I was using a like a Chinese lantern from IKEA. You know, one of those just big white balls.
Yeah, that would create a big, large light source. But the light is soft, but it still comes from your camera's point of view.
Very directional. And then I heard about this, and I made my own black foamy thing with the foam packing from my wireless router and my wife's hairband. So it might cost me essentially zero.
My costs are 25 cents. Really, this thing has to be the cheapest light modifier. And I say light modifier, it's not a diffuser, it's just a modifier. And it's just so you can create directional soft light. And I know that somebody that might be listening to this for the first time might be confused as what it is. But if you go to Google and you just type in black foamy thing, you'll get to my website. There's a bunch of tutorials on this, examples. There's a video clip of how I do it. And I think once you see the results you get, it seriously looks like portrait lighting on location.
There is a photo, Neil, that I saw, and I think it was on an article like that you wrote about the black foamy thing, but I could be wrong, where you took a picture, and I think it was a jazz club of a guy playing the trumpet.
Yeah.
And it's like it's got kind of an orangey red kind of background in behind him, and I believe it was done with the black foamy thing, and that's kind of what blew my mind when I saw that photo. I ran out and I bought some foam and I started playing around with the same thing because that photo blew me away that could have been on camera flash and so I encourage people to check to do exactly that and put it in a search and check your website and look at some of the photos that you've done with the black foamy thing.
And then that photograph you're talking about, I was standing close-ish to the trumpeter. I had either an 85 or a 70-200 on my camera, but I was bouncing my flash to my right across him. So the wall, the light bounces from the wall opposite us. So it looks like it's coming from across. It just awesome. It just looks nothing like on-camera flash. This was one of those photographs right at the beginning. I was just like, man, this looks so good. You know, you look at your camera and go, man, I wish I was a good enough photographer to have taken this.
So when do you use the black foamy thing?
When I photograph indoors and there's bounceable surfaces, the black foamy thing is pretty much always on my camera, because I might be bouncing my flash towards my subject and then I need to block my flash from hitting my subject directly. So specifically for portraits. But also at weddings, even though I might be bouncing my flash behind me during the party or now the reception, I'm bouncing my flash over my shoulder, the piece of black foam there blocks the light from directly hitting somebody in the face behind me. So if I'm photographing the bride and her dad dancing, I might be standing a short distance from the bride's mom. And if I bounce my flash over my shoulder and I hit her in the face with pretty much full power every time, she's not going to like me. And I do want this woman to recommend me to all her friends at work. I need to be loved by the bride's mom. So the black foam thing also just helps block the light from hitting people in the face that's around you. So I think it just makes you a nicer photographer. Not having the flash in people's face.
So why would you bounce the flash versus using off-camera flash in, say, a wedding scenario?
The setting up off-camera flash, it is a little more time-intensive. You have to set up your lights all over, and you might get, especially if you have direct flash, you might get cross-lighting on the dance floor. And I don't think, and I've seen some awesome shots, but I think when I look at a wedding photographer's website and I see they use multiple off-camera flash on location, I sometimes think that what we see are the hero shots, the shots that work. Mm-hmm. I would actually like to see all the photographs and see what their success rate is. So with the on-camera flash like this, I have directional soft light no matter where I move. So I can be in the middle of the dance floor between guests. I can be photographing the speeches. I could be photographing anything or details. So no matter where I move, I have this virtual big softbox off to my side that I can control. And also, if you think about, let's say again, the example of the bride and her dad dancing, they're slowly rotating around. So the bride's looking over dad's shoulder and she's looking towards the camera's left. I need to bounce my flash to the left to have the light coming from that side, to hit her on a have the light coming on a face in a direction that's sensible. But as they rotate, the dad might be looking over shoulder, and now that light needs to come from my right hand side behind me to hit him in his face. Hitting his face doesn't sound good. So the light comes in from a proper angle in his face. So as they rotate, I need to move my lights around. Now, if you're shooting off-camera flash, you need to be switching different remotes on and off to do this, and it becomes really complex finger work, or you have to accept that it's going to be a fairly low success rate where the light is just perfect on them. But with on-camera bounce flash, I can control the direction of light where I stand, and my light is always coming from a proper angle, so my success rate goes up.
And the reality is, nowadays I think expectations of what's of the number of deliverables is very high, meaning that the bride kind of expects 500 plus keepers.
That is true to an extent, but if you look at discrete moments and on a wedding, for example, I need to give them two or three shots of the best man giving a speech, two or three shots of the bridesmaid giving a speech, the groom, the bride and dad dancing. I need to give them, let's say, five shots. So it's still not the volume. So even if you only shoot five images or you shoot 50, you're only going to select five images. Mm-hmm. But I feel that I have 50 images to choose from, as opposed to, damn it, this is an awesome shot, but the light is coming from giving a weird shadow nose because of the multiple off-camera flashes I used. But with me, the light will always be in the proper direction. So I just think my success rate per shot goes up, and it gives me a wider choice. And the moment is all important. But then with me, I'm nearly guaranteed that the moment will have good light. Whereas I think that photographers that use four flashes on around the dance floor, and they create magic, they do have a high risk of that specific shot not having that wonderful lighting. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of off on a tangent here, I think, but I think the power that using bounce flash like this is the utter simplicity of it. I have awesome light no matter where I go. It's flattering, and I can balance it with the ambient light as well. because I mostly shoot TTL flash. So the TTL flash follows my settings.
Right.
So it's a very simple way of working, and I don't have to risk shooting into another flash and weird light. It's just I have nice soft light wherever I go.
And the chances of one of the groomsmen kicking over one of your light stands is now zero.
Yeah, that's also a risk.
No, so you do shoot TTL.
If I shoot the formals and the family groups, and it's off-camera flash, it absolutely has to be manual flash. The moment you have something on a light stand, it has to be manual flash. It just that makes the most sense. But moving around with my on-camera flash, I mostly shoot TTL flash. It's rare occasions that I'll go to manual, because manual flash is reliant on four factors: aperture and ISO, power and distance. So in other words, as my distance to my subject changes, as my distance to the area that I'm bouncing off changes, I have to change my power. So now it becomes a big juggling thing here, changing settings, unless you work in very constrained parameters, certain distances only. Whereas with TTL flash, because it follows my settings, I can move around and I can be at f4.5, I can be at f2.8, I can crank my ISO up and down. The TTL flash, within reason, will follow my settings. So it just becomes a far more flexible way of working.
It's a lot easier in the run-and-gun kind of style.
Yeah, and it's less stress on me. And I don't get home as tired. I don't carry a bunch of lighting gear and set that up and stress about it. It's a very simple way of working. I can be in the middle of the dance floor and dance with people. The simplicity of it appeals to me.
What happens if you have nothing to bounce your flash off of? What happens then?
Yeah, that's a question I often get. What if there's nothing to bounce off? And what if the bounce flash is not powerful enough? Now, then you have to improvise. Now, then you have to do something else. Then you have to use off-camera lighting, or you must use video light, or you have to adapt from there. So the bounce flash thing has its limitations. I mean, it can't do everything. There's certain churches. There's a church here in Newark that's based on the Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris. You walk in, and it's massive. There's bounce your flash, nothing comes back. So you have to use some kind of on-camera light modifier. They don't allow off-camera flash, and it's just grimly dark. So you have to have that piece of Tupperware on your flash. So you have to do that. And I photographed a wedding in the Museum of Natural History in New York. Black floor, black walls, black ceiling. It's black. You can't really put up multiple off-camera flash or anything like that. It's just one of the toughest places I've ever shot in. So I had a flash off-camera with the light modifier, and I tried to get a bit of off-camera flash. Didn't look as wonderful as I normally would get, but it's you kind of adapt to where you are. And when I arrive at a wedding or an event, I don't just have the camera with my flash on my camera. I have light stands, I have some umbrellas, I have soft boxes, I have a Pro Photo 600R that can dump sunlight on somebody, huge amounts of light. So I have a range of tools that I bring with me that I progressively go towards as I need it. So when you have nothing to bounce off, you adapt.
Here in Germany, they're big fans of wood paneling, ceilings, walls, everything.
That's
a nice dark wood paneling. So I usually end up just going in the corner and weeping for most of the job. It's never an easy solution here. Do you ever use the white? This is nothing to do with the black foamy thing, really. But do you ever use the white card that's built into the flash?
I've used it way in the beginning. I've used it since by turning the flash around and using that white card to flag my flash.
Okay.
So I don't really use the white card simply because, again, I don't want light to come from the camera's axis. Because that's flat light.
I forgot mine was there. Adam, did you know your camera, your flash has those?
Yes, I do. I've never used it.
Yeah, I just forgot it. Back in the old days, that was the thing. Like everybody bounced it off the ceiling. Like when you're shooting film and before there was even TTL, like you'd shoot with just the thyristor, the flash would sort of read itself. And you'd get halfway, hey, I shot your wedding like that, Adam.
Thanks.
And, you got married pre-digital, man. and that's kind of how it went. You would bounce it and put it, you'd actually tape an index card on there. They never came built in. But at this point, I've completely forgotten that mine even has that feature.
Yeah, that used to be the technique, especially with news photographers that have a white index card and a rubber band that they put behind the flash to bounce the flash and throw some light forward. But I think the natural progression from there is to bounce your flash behind you or off to the side to get directional light. And I think what really changed that or made that much more possible is the high ISO capable cameras. No, because 800 ISO these days is not a high ISO anymore. 800 ISO is kind of a medium ISO at this point.
That's what I was telling Adam when he got his 6D. What does your 6D go to?
Something silly like 128,000.
And I said, yeah. I shot Adam's wedding on film, and I wanted some very, very high-speed film that had just come out, I think, at the time. Fuji was making a color 3200, and no one could believe it. Like, you know, you were shooting in the dark at that point. And now that's just kind of the starting point.
No, I think it's actually, I correct myself, I think it's like 25,600 or something is the high ISO setting.
Right.
Yeah. Irregardless, silly.
We're living in incredible times because at this point, you can get with a fast lens and high ISO capable camera, you can shoot in light that you cannot read in. You know, it's getting to that point. You can get pull a photograph out of light where you can barely read, and that's phenomenal.
Now, with the black foamy thing, you talked a little bit about getting good catch lights. So, are you able to always get good catch lights using it?
I would say yes, unless I'm forced to bounce off a ceiling, but I can give you a 90%+ guarantee that if I work indoors and it's bounceable surfaces and there's enough area to bounce light off, I can guarantee a catch light.
Is that something that you try to achieve, or that's sort of a byproduct of a well-lit photo?
It's more a byproduct of getting the direction of the light good, because if the light comes from too high, you get the shadows in the eyes, there's a bit of a shadow on the nose, the forehead is too bright. So the moment you bring in the light from a proper angle, there's a catch light in the eye and the light just looks good. So it's kind of a natural byproduct of just doing it in that sequence.
Adam?
Yes?
Any questions?
No, Neil's answered all of them and he's added things that I didn't even think to ask about.
I know, my hands sore from writing this down. I wish we were recording this.
Well, there's no need to. Book has been done for you. If you just go black foamy thing on Google, you'll get there, or Neil Tangents will get you there, or even I think Neil Flash will get you there. So you, one way or another, you'll get to my website and all the stuff's there.
And that's just good marketing. You've covered all the bases.
I sometimes get people that go, I found your website by accident, and I'm thinking to myself, it wasn't an accident. It's been planned that way.
We've had a few people find our website by accident, and it definitely was an accident. Judging by the search terms. So, no, I highly recommend, absolutely, start with the blog, and once you start reading the blog, you're going to want to find everything in one convenient place, and, well, three convenient places, and that's Neil's books. So definitely check those out. I highly recommend them. What I like about the best about your, well, I've read the one book, is that there's a lot of really good, solid takeaways in the book. A lot of books on the subject I've read are a little bit vague and sort of talk about, you know, lighting in general, but yours are very to the point. Here, if you do this, you'll get these results. Go do it.
Yeah, I think it's the same as with my blog. And even the way that I used to post on the photography forums, instead of posting vague instructions, I like to post a photograph and go, this is the results I get, this is how I do it. So that if you look at the photograph and you go, I like that, then you know how to do it. If you look at my photograph and go, nah, not for me, then that's fine. But at least there's the proof of what I do. You know, it's not just vague instruction. But if I can just pump my third book a little bit, The third book is just something I really believe in. I think my voice has matured, my photography is better, and I really think this book, The Direction of Light, is a book that it can change a photographer's approach, it can change your photography, it can have that big an impact, because instead of a book's theme being babies or boudoir or studio portraiture or something like that, a very specific theme, on-camera flash, off-camera flash, this book takes a wider approach. It looks at the direction and quality of light. And then I look at available light, on-camera flash, off-camera flash, multiple off-camera flash, and video light. And I pull it all together that once you understand the common theme here is that it's the direction and quality of light, once you get that, you can use any light source and make it work. And I think there's a unique approach there that I think can have a dramatic impact on somebody's photography.
And where can people find your book, Neil?
It's available on Amazon, so it's actually one of the best-selling books in the photography category right now on Amazon. But if you go to my website, the link to the book is there.
Okay.
Beautiful. I'm sold. I'm buying it. You just sold me.
Again, I think right now it's $17 or even less than $17 on Amazon. It's such a ridiculous low price, and I'm biased as the author, but $17, this is like such good value for money.
So buy two of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's my message to you. So, Adam, next week's challenge.
Yes.
What do you think? Of course, we're going to go with it. It'll be a little bit redundant for you because you just did it, but we're doing it again. We're going to do this very specific black foamy thing next week.
Okay.
That's it.
Can I just enter my same photo again?
Yeah, I'm just going to roll yours over. I'm going to flip it horizontally in Photoshop, though. Just, you know, jazz it up a little bit.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm going to enter yours as mine, since my ego took a beating there. I'm okay with it.
All right.
Adam, where can people find your photos?
Facebook, our twohosers.com Facebook page is where they primarily will be found, or schwartzchronicles.com when my wife decides to put some of them up.
Right.
Yeah, it's been less and less frequent, I have to say. I've really been relying on Facebook a lot.
That seems reasonable.
Yeah, how about yours?
Mine, as always, at alanattridge.com. The two of us at twohosers.com, where you can find everything you want to know. Twitter, Facebook, Google+, all those sorts of things. And more importantly, you can find the links to get to Neil's site, which is neilvn.com. Is that the number one place people can find you?
Yes, it is. And if it's confusing, then Planet Neil will get you there as well.
Okay. So we're going to put that link up there. So check it out. And until next week, get out there and make better photos.